of America! France! UK!
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. This program is live for Memorial Day, the 25th day of May, 2015. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. And I'm being told in the chat room by inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky that everybody thought I took the day off. I thought I said last Friday that I would do everything in my power to be live this evening. And, well, I guess my powers are formidable because this program is live. Look, I can't stand to be away from the mic. This is what I do. It's been a very, very busy weekend. We've been running around in a U-Haul van and that sort of thing. Moving boxes, carrying on, things like that. Our youngest is graduating from high school, so that means that Agnes can be back home. We moved our youngest away from this truly craptastic county school system over to another county where she at least had a fighting chance. And she has worked her little butt off, and she is graduating next week. So congratulations to the doodle. We are, all of us, very proud of you. So that's what we did this weekend, right? Yeah. That was this weekend, and then today I said, well, that I would, in fact, try to be on the air, and, well, here I am. The Horn is live for Memorial Day 2015. And, of course, Memorial Day is, I don't know, I have a hard time calling Memorial Day a holiday. It is technically the first day, it's unofficially the first day of summer. First day of summer, the summer solstice, will not come around until, what, June 21st or so? Yeah, longest day of the year. So that means we're actually about 3 weeks away from the first day of summer. But no, because of the, just because of the way the holidays fall and everything, this is the unofficial first day of summer, school's about to let out, that kind of thing. And it is a holiday that was born out of the desire of people to remember the war dead. And that's why I say I have a hard time treating it as a holiday. But nevertheless, people fire up their barbecue grills and whatnot on this weekend. And have some getting-together time. Somersville Lake was festooned with people out on their pontoon boats and their ski boats and whatnot. They had a lovely candlelight service up at the cemetery where my uncle, who never returned from France in the Second World War, is in his is at his long rest. Great uncle, who did not come back from Belgium and the Battle of the Bulge, he's in a different cemetery. That cemetery, incidentally, is at risk of being washed into the Kanawha River at some point when the entire mountain complex that the ever benevolent coal companies kindly blasting away the mountain there for energy independence have pretty much ruined. That entire mountain complex is coming down into the road. It's just a filthy mess. Ah, good. I haven't lost my mind. Thank you, Sylvia. Yes, Bob, you did say that if you got back early enough, you'd be on the air. I heard Friday's show three times. Bless your heart, Sylvia. I can only do any given show once. But thank you. Thank you very much indeed. I just got a message from an anonymous contributor. Here's another Have a Show on Me match. I was never here. You did not hear this. I was never here. That must mean we have another Third Stage Guild Navigator in the crowd. That's the Third Stage Guild Navigator line from the David Lynch version of Dune. Many machines on Ix. So there is a challenge on the table. There's $150 out there. Well, there will be, waiting for folks to match it. If we come up with $150 this evening, our anonymous contributor, who was never here, will double it, which is awfully, awfully kind. Thank you very much indeed. That was fast. Two-thirds of that has now been matched. Thank you very kindly, Catherine. Thank you very much indeed. So we are off to a roaring good start. Thank you very much. There are a ton, and I do mean a ton, of builds that are awaiting service this week, somewhere around $1,500 worth. Yeah, and I'm trying to set, by the way, at the same time, as a program note, I'm trying to set aside a little bit to cover a trip to Cleveland. And thanks very much to John, who provided a Have a Show on Bill, which I have, in fact, set aside for that purpose. On Tuesday morning, the 2nd of June, Agnes and I are going to get up at zero dark 30 and start making our way toward Cleveland. And hope, and then we'll be at the Euclid Tavern that evening for Mr. Stress, Bill Miller's memorial, June the 2nd, and then we will get up on Wednesday, June the 3rd, and come howling back down the interstate in hopes of having a program that evening, because it will be, we'll have live program next week, next week. We will have live programming on June the 1st. We will have live programming from the Euclid Tavern on June the 2nd, and then we will have live programming on June the 3rd. June the 4th and June the 5th, no programming. We've got family coming in from 1,000 miles away to watch Doodle graduate, and so that Thursday and Friday and Saturday are going to be strictly family time. Okay? Thank you. And I hope... I have to see. I can't guarantee anything. I have to see what it's going to look like, what the situation is. I'm taking a phone and hoping that we will have sufficient 4G LTE connectivity to be able to send out both an audio stream and a video stream, but at the very least, an audio stream of the memorial for Bill, Mr. Stress Miller. Who went on, what do you used to say? I'll leave you where I found you. Well, he left us where he found us on the 18th of May. And I think, I'm guessing his memorial is going to be quite something up there at the Euclid Tavern where he held court for ever so many years with the Mr. Stress Blues Band. Now, as for this week, we should have a completely typical... Okay, when are we ever typical? Anyway, we should have an ordinary... Well, it's never ordinary either. We should have our usual broadcast schedule with a little note. We will have a guest evangelist for prayer meeting Wednesday. This Wednesday, the 27th day of May. And you'll probably want to be around for that. It's going to be mighty special. I really think it is. The good pastor is a right smart evangelist. And I have a feeling we'll be having a revival is what we're going to be having. It's going to be a revival on Wednesday the 27th of May. By the way, this really is kind of the unofficial start of summer. I don't remember us getting to Naked Radio quite so quickly in the broadcast calendar, but yeah, we are broadcasting live this evening from the Horn Studio Sauna. Yes, sauna. Thank you, Janie. And it's funny. Everybody, all my friends up in the Northwoods, they all say sauna. So I know that Janie was not leading me down the primrose path. So it is a toasty 85 degrees here in the Horn Studio Sauna. And I don't know, I'm just, if only I had some birch branches or whatever it is that the Russians use to beat the snot out of themselves in their saunas. But I don't, so I'll just sit here and do Naked Radio and sweat. If you feel the need for eye bleach, well, I understand completely. Now, so all that having been said, it's 11 minutes past the hour. All of that having been said, don't think for a minute that even though it's Memorial Day, that somehow obviates what this day always is. Oh, by the way, thank you very kindly to Randy in PA. We have now met our anonymous contributor, who was never here. We have now met his match for the evening. Thank you to Catherine, and thank you to Randy. Thank you very much indeed. Now, it's Memorial Day. It is a day of remembrance. But the world does not slow down. Well, it's not so much the world. The morons don't let up. But just because it's a federal Monday holiday. Oh, no, sweet Jesus, no. And so, consequently...
You've got to remember that these are just simple farmers. These are people of the land. You know, morons.
That's right, step right up, hurry, 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 it's Moran Monday on the Horn. Here, behind this thin cybernetic canvas, you will see, you won't see, it's radio, you will hear the most disturbing, the most frightening, the most outrageous morons known to humankind. That's because we have here all manner of morons, birther morons, deather morons, ninther morons, tenther morons, Bircher Morans, Bagger Morans, Booger Eater Morans from the Booger Sphere. That's right, we've got them all. We've got Republicans, we've got Libertarians, we have the full toxic panoply of Moranity on display for you here on this here Moran Monday on the Horn. Yes, indeed, yes, indeed. You can't tell the Morans without a program, and this is the program that tells the Morans. You just can't tell them much. Oh, indeed, indeed. We always offer up a gentle advisory here at the Moran Monday Tent that people with small children, small animals, big animals, wallets, bags, purses, European messenger bags should keep them close at hand as the Morans can get grabby. Head for the hills or you'll be up to your armpits in Morans. Oh, merciful God, it's twoo, it is twoo.
I scarcely know where to begin, but I'll sure try. This has become typical. But every time it seems that such is the nature of the ongoing descent of this once great nation, this crumbling empire, into full-on white anguish backlash. Every time it is announced that a talented young black actor will play anything except a hip-hop thug in a movie, the white wing goes absolutely crazier than a sprayed roach. You may, Idris Elba? Was that his name? I don't... Yeah, that was the last white hissy over, because he's going to be James Bond or something. Well, Michael B. Jordan, who is not that Michael Jordan, but a different Michael Jordan, a Michael Jordan who is rather a good young actor, has written an op-ed in Entertainment Weekly. You see, Michael B. Jordan has been cast in the new... Because apparently every third movie made in Hollywood now has to be based on a comic book. Kind of says something about the culture now, doesn't it? Michael B. Jordan has been cast as Johnny Storm in the upcoming film of the Fantastic Four, a superhero supergroup, if you will. Johnny Storm is a guy on fire. Now, if I was to work this from the other side of the street, the anti-racism side of the street, I might be inclined to ask, why does a black guy have to play the guy on fire? But that's just, I'm cranky. But that was certainly not the objection of the morons of the White Wing, as they took to the Twitters to manifest their shock, their horror, their anguish, their agony, their disgust at the fact that Michael B. Jordan will be playing Johnny Storm in the Fantastic Four movie. Like I said, he wrote an editorial, an op-ed, over at Entertainment Weekly, that noble journalistic enterprise. And he said, you're not supposed to go on the Internet when you're cast as a superhero. But after taking on Johnny Storm in Fantastic Four, a character originally written with blonde hair and blue eyes, I wanted to check the pulse out there. Oh, I didn't want to be ignorant about what people were saying. Turns out this is what they were saying. A black guy? I don't like it. They must be doing it because Obama's president. And it's not true to the comic. Or even, they've destroyed it. Yeah. Johnny Storm, the Human Torch. Thank you, Randy. That's what I thought. He said it used to bother me, but it doesn't anymore. I can see everybody's perspective, and I know I can't ask the audience to forget 50 years of comic books. Or 400 years of racism there, Mr. Jordan, and I'm just saying. But the world is a little more diverse in 2015 than when the Fantastic Four comic first came out in 1961, and I admire what you're attempting to ever so gently say here, Mr. Jordan, but no, the world is not more diverse. The world has always been this diverse. It's just that there's the white racist privileged ability to suppress other ethnicities has taken rather of a beating since 1961. Because, you know, it was wrong. He continues, plus, if Stan Lee writes an email to my director saying, you're good, I'm okay with this, who am I to go against that? Some people may look at my casting as political correctness or an attempt to meet a racial quota. Yeah, because, you know, there's a racial quota for superheroes? Okay. Or as part of the year of black film. Or they could look at it as a creative choice by the director, Josh Trank, who is in an interracial relationship himself, a reflection of what a modern family looks like today. This is a family movie about four friends, two of whom are myself and Kate Mara as my adopted sister, who are brought together by a series of unfortunate events to create unity in a team. That's the message of the movie, if people can just allow themselves to see it. And this young man has had a dose of nasty poured on him, of course, from the, who else, the Republicans, the Birchers, the Baggers, the Deathers, the Ninthers, the Tenthers, the Booger Eaters. God. I mean, consider. I mean, who takes time out of their finite life to get on Twitter and complain about the way an imaginary character in the first place is being portrayed? Why will I not be surprised if I find out there's a Rush Limbaugh clip about Johnny Storm, my friends, was drawn white. Blonde hair, blue eyes. Stan Lee always imagined Johnny Storm, my friends, as a white man. But because of Barack Obama and because of the political correctness art, hand me another handful of OxyContin. I'll crush them up so I can get the refreshing burst of flavor. But Michael B. Jordan continues, to the trolls on the internet, I want to say, get your head out of the computer, go outside and walk around, look at the people walking next to you, look at your friends, who they're interacting with, and just understand that this is the world we live in. It's okay to like it. That's really gentle. That's very, very gentle. But they don't like it, Mr. Jordan. You see, they don't like it. They want their world white. They want their bread white. They want their houses white. They want the White House white with white people in it. Because they're still pissed off, apparently, about the outcome of the recent unpleasantness, 155 years ago. God almighty. The stupid is strong with these ones. I kid you not. But that's just a taste of the morality that's out there for our consideration this evening. And there's a lot. Oh, there's a lot indeed. They done when right-wingers aren't losing their mind at people of color, they're losing their minds at women. Here, then, an account from the meeting, the biannual meeting. They meet once every 2 years. That's biannual, right? Of the Texas State Legislature. They were considering, the Texas State Legislature was, a little something called Senate Bill 575, according to the Houston Chronicle. And in the course of this consideration, well, that's true. Robert in Australia noting, Jesus, Bob, Jesus! And he's not using it, it's not an exclamation. Jesus. Always played by a white guy. Mostly. Except for, arguably the real Jesus, who was not a white guy. But I get the point. So SB 575, Senate Bill 575, was under consideration on Sunday evening in the Texas State Legislature. This story's just precious. No, it's not. And SB 575 was a bill about, I mean, come on, what kind of what all kinds of problems does Texas have? I mean, Texas has a terrible uninsured problem. They've got more uninsured American citizens than any other state in the union. That might be cause for a little concern. They're one of the most environmentally toxic states in the union. That might be worthy of the consideration of a deliberative legislative body like the Texas State Senate. No, naturally, if the legislature is meeting in the state of Texas, they're worrying about women's parts. And so SB 575 was going to be moved out of the State Affairs Committee. Is that what they call it now? And they were going to move it over to the Calendars Committee. But along the way, the uterus-free men people in the state legislature, in the Senate down there in Texas, because they spend so much of their time worrying about a woman's woman parts, or I don't know, maybe being envious of them or terrified of them, or I don't know. I really don't. I can't tell you, apart from doing this program and being constantly inundated with all of this right-wing jackassery about women's reproductive health, I can't tell you how many days I go without thinking about a fallopian tube. That's a real cool word, too, fallopian. Isn't that a book in the Bible? Isn't that the book in the Bible where it says, wives submit unto your husbands? Fallopians 4:20 or something? Oh, no, that's flip-floppians. But while most of us, and I mean, yeah, she's busy elsewhere in the house, but I would hazard that I could get Agnes back here and say, honey, how much time do you spend thinking about ovaries and uteruses and fallopian tubes and cervixes and stuff? And the answer would probably be something on the approach of almost never. Well, not almost never, but not really that often. It's a different thing, and it's a tough thing to get your mind around if you happen to be a God-fearing, upstanding, Christ-centered, Bible-believing, conservative, family-values, repig-licking. Because they think about uteruses and fetuses all the time. Hey, Fred, pass the ketchup. You know, Bill, I was just thinking about uteruses the other day. Here's the ketchup. Couple of Republican legislators out on the golf course. You know, if you sink that 12-foot putt, you'll make birdie, and you'll win our little Nassau. Well, yes, that's entirely true, my good friend. But what value is there in winning a $5 Nassau when little babies are being slaughtered in the womb every day of the week? Why, we've had a 700 million bajillion baby hold'em cost since Roe versus Wade was handed down. Well, that's true. Press! I mean, these guys can't stop thinking about lady parts. And they were thinking real hard about women's womanly parts when it came down to SB 575. And SB 575 is a bill to ban anybody's health insurance. Anybody's! Wait, free market? What? Anybody's health insurance from covering an abortion. No, really. Health insurance at all. All women seeking an abortion must pay cash. Any day now, I expect one of the gold bug teabaggers to say, well, if we can't ban it, we're going to make it, you can only pay for an abortion in gold, possibly silver, because Snake Flag, don't read to me. Jackasses. But no, so that was the bill. That was a bill saying no insurance could cover abortions. Never mind the freedom of contract, privity of contract, all of that sacred contract language that comes out of the bad old days of the Lochner Court, about which the thinkers, the public intellectuals at places like the Heritage Foundation and the Competitive Enterprise Institute and the American Enterprise Institute and the Cato Institute, don't forget the Dipshit Institute, they're big in Republican circles, about which the Lochner privity of contract stuff, about which they all get positively dewy-eyed at the mere mention. Contract is sacred, the right of one person to form a contract with a great big conglomerate corporation shall not be infringed, yada, yada, yada. The Lochner Court just about wanted to make that part of the Bill of Rights, and they, for a while, damn near succeeded. But all of a sudden, all that free market stuff goes right out the window if a bunch of pasty-faced, doughy white guys decide that they want to interfere with a contractual relationship between a woman and her doctor and her insurance provider. And we wonder where the Josh Duggars of the world come from. So here's how it shook out. They were going to move SB 575 out of the State Affairs Committee, and they were going to move it over to the Calendars Committee if Representing Jonathan Strickland agreed to drop an amendment to the bill that would have banned abortions based on fetal abnormalities. That's how sick these people are. So Strickland said he would do it. That's when three women people members of the Texas legislature, of the House of Representatives, this was a Senate bill that had cleared the Senate and come over to the House. Well, they started having second thoughts. Representatives Sarah Davis and Debbie Riddle and Patricia Harless all backed out of the bill at the last minute. And they changed the committee vote to a 7-7 tie, which then killed the bill in committee and kept it from moving on to the Calendars Committee. This, then, is when Representing Byron Cook comes into the fray, because when that happened, at about 9:30 p.m. Central Daylight Time, Representing Jonathan Strickland, who apparently has a constituency that made up entirely of fetuses, got up in the face of Byron Cook. It got so bad that Strickland was all the way up in, as the young people say, Representing Cook's grill. And they's about to start throwing punches when the sergeants at arms of the Texas House of Representatives had to come in between the two to keep them from, taking it to multi rounds. No, really. It, it got really weird. They then turned around and sent the whole thing, well, it was supposed to have been killed in committee, but they turned around and sent it to the floor of the House in Texas for a vote by the entire body. It's on the House calendar for tomorrow, Tuesday. All of this happened because of amendments to an otherwise unprepossessing bill about agency review. That second part, that amendment, think about that. This is the re-pig-lickin mindset. This is the patriarchy at work. This is white male privilege in all its screaming glory. They are sending a bill to the House to keep private insurance under the Affordable Care Act from covering abortions. But that wasn't enough for Representative Jonathan Strickland. Think about all the reasons, and I've read some brilliant essays in the last year or two about those reasons. Think about all the reasons why a woman might choose not to have a baby with fetal abnormalities. Now, those reasons are very real. Because of a pro-life obstetrician, my darling wife, years ago, was forced to carry to term a pair of horribly malformed boys. By the time she went into labor, one of the boys was already dead inside of her. The other one lived for a few minutes after birth. She had a choice, but she was very young. And no one, most of all her walking malpractice of a doctor, didn't inform her of it. And so there is anguish that has traveled down the decades now associated. But a man in the Texas legislature has decided that he knows better than any doctor in the world, and that he certainly knows better than the woman carrying the baby. And I have no doubt that he was doing it in the name of Jesus! Yeah. So, understand, this is a brutal example of the agony through which upstanding, God-fearing, Christ-centered, Bible-believing Christian male legislators want to put women through. and it is cruel, and it is heartless, and it is merciless, and it is sickening. And if it isn't stopped on the vote, and it's, I'm not entirely clear reading the story as to whether or not the bill now includes the fetal abnormalities language or doesn't. It's not at all clear. Maybe somebody can help me a little bit with that. But I am sickened. I'm shocked. Disgusted at the notion that some nosy-assed, evangelical, fundamentalist Republican could dare insinuate himself into a decision so private and so painful. Of course, there are other questions that can be asked. We could, for instance, ask, Representative Strickland why it is that his God does such cruel things as to cause fetal abnormalities. Why did God hate that baby so much? Why does the brutal Bronze Age God hate the woman so much? There's really no satisfactory answer, is there? No. But if it's happening in Texas, you can bet your ass it'll show up in some legislating in, say, Alabama stan, Mississippi stan, Louisiana stan, Kansas stan, any of the stan states, because none of these things happen by accident. I'm sure Representative Strickland is not that creative. He's been given this by some tax-exempt religious think tank or some, maybe ALEC. I know they're not supposed to be in the social issues business, but yeah. I kind of think that they are from time to time when they want to. So we got that. And ever so much more. I read somewhere, and I hope I'm wrong. I think it was one of the commenters on my Facebook page, that TLC used to stand for the Learning Channel, now stands for Touching Little Children. TLC is trying to figure out a way to keep 19 kids and counting, you know, the rampant tales of Duggery. That, by the way, needs to be a neologism inserted into the English vocabulary, Duggery. Yeah, Duggery is when white Christian privilege is used to cover up a vile act of incestuous sexual molestation, and there is no mercy whatsoever for the victims. That's Duggery. Yeah. TLC is trying to figure out a way to keep that program on the air without Josh Duggar. You can almost hear the conversation going on at network. Yeah, but it's such a successful program. It's making us so much money. I mean, can't we ride these little incest? They're grown women now, for God's sakes. Can't we ride their incest-ridden backs for a few more tens of millions or hundreds of millions of dollars, please? God Almighty. I mean, we have stupid out there. But this is past stupid. This is way up into mean, isn't it? Speaking of mean and stupid, let's check in with Pastor Governor Brother Diabetes Snake Oil Cure Salesman Mike Huckstaby. He was invited back home to Fox News TV Radio Rwanda on Sunday. Might want to get the hockey puck. Chris Wallace had him on his pathetic excuse of a program. And Mike Huckstaby is trying to explain it. Now, this is a guy who defended an incestuous child molester and said that anybody objecting to it is bloodthirsty. Yeah. He wants to lay out, he's going to lay out what a president needs to do to be really president. Yeah.
Governor, I want to keep moving along because, as I say, there were a lot of things you said in your announcement. You also seemed to indicate that as president, you wouldn't necessarily obey court rulings, even the Supreme Court. Here you are.
Many of our politicians have surrendered to the false god of judicial supremacy, which would allow black-robed and unelected judges the power to make law as well as enforce it.
But, Governor, we have operated under the principle of judicial review since the Marbury versus Madison case in 1803.
Judicial review is exactly what we've operated under. We have not operated under judicial supremacy. Presidents Lincoln, Jefferson, Jackson, presidents have understood that the Supreme Court cannot make a law.
You know, it's interesting he mentions Andrew Jackson, because Andrew Jackson was, in fact, historically a president who told the Supreme Court to go F itself, sort of an early Cheney, if you will. When the Congress passed the Indian Removal Act at the behest and bullying of Andrew Jackson, who hated, I mean hated, despised, loathed, yuck, every indigenous person on this entire continent. When Congress passed the Indian Removal Act, it was challenged in the Supreme Court. And guess what? The Indian Removal Act was found to be unconstitutional. The court was not making law. They were saying that the Congress and the President had exceeded their constitutional abilities to make laws because the Indian Removal Act was noxious to the Constitution. Andrew Jackson said, Justice Marshall has made his ruling. Now let him enforce it. And proceeded to go about the business of creating a genocide that included but was not limited to what we recognize in history as the Trail of Tears. So Mike Huckstaby says that that's the kind of president he wants to be. Reference Lincoln. Abraham Lincoln suspended the right of habeas corpus. However, when Lincoln suspended the right of habeas corpus, he was relying, because he was rather a shrewd lawyer, which Pastor Brother Governor Reverend Diabetes Snake Oil Patent Medicine Cure Salesman Mike Huckstaby is not. When Lincoln suspended the writ of habeas corpus, he was doing so based upon his own interpretation of the Constitution. Let's check out the text real quick. We're talking about Article 1, Section 9 of the Constitution. Section 9 deals with limitations upon the Congress. The Constitution clearly tells the Congress that it may not pass any bill of attainder or ex post facto law. It says that it can't pass direct taxes, but that was modified by the 16th Amendment. It says that there shall be no titles of nobilities granted by the United States. Right? Yeah. It also says the privilege of the writ of habeas corpus shall not be suspended. Yeah, but Lincoln did. Because he read the document. The privilege of the writ of habeas corpus shall not be suspended unless when in cases of rebellion or invasion the public safety may require it. I think, beginning with that artillery exercise using Fort Sumter as a target, I think a state of rebellion did exist at the time that Abraham Lincoln suspended the writ of habeas corpus, but don't try to explain that to Pastor Reverend Brother Governor Mike Huxterby, diabetic snake oil patent medicine salesman. Don't try to explain that to him, because Pastor Brother Governor Huxterby is dumber than a post. I mean, this is a man absolutely, mesmerized by his own brilliance, his own perceived brilliance, which doesn't really exist. But that's okay. He spends a lot of his time, Pastor Brother Governor Huxterby does, thinking about, writing about, and talking about things that don't exist. That's why he's Pastor Brother, the Pastor Brother part. So he references Lincoln and he references Andrew Jackson. Do continue, Your Eminence.
They cannot make it. The legislature has to make it. The executive branch has to sign it and enforce it. And the notion that the Supreme Court comes up with a ruling and that automatically subjects the two other branches to following it defies everything there is about the three equal branches of government.
Except that it doesn't. It doesn't. And see, he's trying to cast, this is all about whether or not a couple of guys can pick out a China pattern and go get married. This is about whether we're going to have the economic expansion of chintzy little wedding chapels in Las Vegas to include people of the same gender. Right. This is actually about whether or not we're going to say that the 14th Amendment's Equal Protection Clause actually means what the 14th Amendment's Equal Protection Clause says, to wit, that all Americans, all United States citizens, shall have the equal protection of the law. That there's not going to be a separate set of laws for one group and another set of laws for the more dominant, socially preferable group. See, marriage equality is not, no matter how hard Pastor Brother Governor Mike Huxterby tries to say it is, it's not the judges making law. This is just the same old tired, tawdry dodge that the right wing uses every time it doesn't get its way in a court ruling.
Those liberal activist judges, and judge made law in black robes and stuff.
Hey, wait a minute. I think I got a little hunk of possum stuck in my teeth. Let me peel off a piece of toenail and dig that out real quick. All right? If the marriage equality ruling comes down from the Supreme Court and says that everybody in this country, be they male and female, female and female, male and male, may get married, and, of course, there will be a dissenting opinion from Slappy Coke Can Thomas, and there will probably be a dissenting opinion from Fat Tony Scalia, whose daddy was head of the Mussolini fan club in the United States. Yeah. But it will be a ruling that says that the civil institution of marriage as a government, as a function of government, because marriage doesn't happen in churches, it happens in courthouses. It's a matter of clerks filing things, not preachers mumbling things. If marriage equality becomes the constitutional interpretation promulgated by some majority of the Roberts Court, and I'm not sure about that, it will merely be a matter of saying that state laws regarding marriage must be in harmony with the 14th Amendment to the Constitution of the United States, and to the extent that they are not, those laws are stricken down as being unconstitutional. Now, at what point in that entire scenario is anybody making law? Hint, not at all, even a little bit. There's no law being made. It is merely a matter of the Constitution being interpreted by the Supreme Court, which the Supreme Court has been doing sometimes better than others, and quite often not very well at all, for the last, 228 years. But try to explain that to an ignorant, moron like Mike Huckabee. Do continue.
Chris, the Supreme Court is not the supreme branch, and for God's sake, it isn't the supreme being.
But sir,
it is the Supreme Court.
Well, that clears everything up, doesn't it? Because, of course, that's the argument being made by these theocratic wannabe mullahs. Ayatollah Huckabee. He wants to say that he knows what his invisible friend wants, and his invisible friend is bigoted against the very same things that he, Pastor Brother Governor, diabetes, patent medicine, snake oil salesman Mike Huckabee, says it is. Isn't that convenient? But I heard supreme being there.
But sir, George Will, the conservative columnist, has pointed out that back in 1957, another governor of Arkansas, Orville Faubus, decided to disregard and refuse to obey the Supreme Court's ruling to desegregate schools. President Eisenhower had to call in the 101st Airborne. Are you saying that President Huckabee might decide he wasn't going to obey the ruling on desegregation, or like President Nixon, to turn over the tapes? That, you know, it's up in the air as to whether you're going to obey the Supreme Court?
Well, Chris, as you know, George Will is no fan of mine. He's not very fond of me. He recently called me appalling.
Which he is. But notice the response there. He did not his first response was not to take issue with George Will's analysis, such as it is, but rather to say, George Will don't like me. He said, I'm appalling. Andy, she called me a creature. No, this is, really, he called me appalling. That is the Ernest T. Bass defense. How do you do, Mrs. Wiley? Right?
The Supreme Court?
Well, Chris, as you know, George Will is no fan of mine. He's not very fond of me. He recently called me appalling. So I'm not surprised that he would make such a false comparison. But the point is, in that case, the Supreme Court had ruled, the legislature and the executive branch had agreed with the Supreme Court, and precisely what happened is what should happen.
Wait, so if the Supreme Court rules, then the Congress and the President have to agree with the ruling? Because I've read the Constitution several times. A lot. And I've never seen anything even remotely like that in the Constitution. where they, there's got to be unanimous agreement between the Congress, the executive, and the Supreme Court. It simply doesn't exist. But this is an illustration of the absolute power, theocratic power madness of Pastor Governor Brother Mike Huckstervey. I do hope you've not put the hockey puck away.
The president ordered the airborne to come in and enforce the law that did exist.
But
it wasn't that the president defied the law. The president was carrying out the law and using all the forces at his resource to do it.
But okay, let's say the president decided, I don't like the Supreme Court's ruling on that. Let's say Nixon had said, for instance, in Watergate, I don't want to turn over the tapes and the court can't make me.
Well,
see, that's exactly what happened with Andrew Jackson. I wonder if he'll go back to Andrew Jackson. No.
The president still has to follow whatever the law is.
No, he doesn't. Andrew Jackson proved that. Justice Marshall has made him ruling his ruling. Now let him enforce it. Because the Supreme Court does not have any military power whatsoever.
Congress have a law that tells him what he's going to do. In that case, the Congress was ready to impeach Nixon, and he ultimately resigned. I want to get back to the main point here. It's a matter.
On the other hand, the Congress and the Andrew Jackson business is much more informative along the lines of this argument because the Congress was eager for a genocide too. So they both decided to disagree with the Supreme Court and went about the business of killing hundreds. Thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, and if you take in the rest of the 19th century and up into the 20th, millions! Millions. Of peoples who had been here for thousands upon thousands of years before the first white Christian ever set foot on this continent. Which reminds me, this being Memorial Day, I sure do hope that there have been memorial decorations placed on the graves, such as it is, Crazy Horse, Geronimo, Cochise, Sitting Bull. Tecumseh, Osceola, because, see, I'm sure, and if somebody was doing, like, real journalism about this, I'm sure that there are Civil War cemeteries all over the South where Confederate graves have been festooned with that filthy, filthy, blood-soaked, ugly, nasty, vile, vulgar, racist, stinking banner that they insist on continuing to wave. And those are people who fell in an act of treason. I certainly hope there is some memorializing going on today, if they feel so inclined, because observing a white holiday, you know, maybe that one needs a second thought. But take a moment to remember, because not all those who die in war are necessarily members of the victorious contingent. If adherents to treason can decorate graves in the South with Confederate flags, and they do. And by God, I hope there's some memorializing going on for people who are a million times better than Robert E. Lee ever was. Sitting Bull, Crazy Horse, Cochise, Geronimo, Osceola, Tecumseh, and a host of other brave and decent human beings. But back to Mike Huckstervey.
A balance of power. If the Supreme Court could just make a ruling and everybody has to bow down and fall on their faces and worship that law.
Which no one does. There is no Supreme Court, there is no constitutional provision for worshiping the Supreme Court. In fact, there's actually a constitutional provision incorporated by amendment. It's the first one that says there shall be no governmentally enforced religion. But again, that's one of those that Mike Huckabee doesn't like to talk about unless it operates to his benefit.
It isn't a law because it hasn't been yet passed. Then what if the Supreme Court ruled that they were going to make the decision as to who was going to be the next president and save the taxpayers and the voters from all the expense and trouble of voting?
The goddess of irony never sleeps. Mike, that's been done, buddy. That horse is out of the barn. We've got the $1 trillion debt. We've got the shattered bodies coming home. We've got the flag-draped cardboard boxes coming into Delaware from 2003 to 2010 to prove it. And more boxes still coming home from Afghanistan. Because the Supreme Court has saved the taxpayers the hassle of an election and instead appointed a president. He's painting pictures in his goddamn shower in Dallas as we speak.
And they'll just pick a president. Well, we would say, well, they can't do that.
Except for the fact that they did. And because we're liberals and progressives, we went along with it. I mean, we wouldn't want to be sore losers or anything. Especially not given the fact that we won! Get over it.
Why can't they do it? They can't do it because it's not in the law. We are.
But the 14th Amendment is, you dipshit! God almighty, this man is dumber than a stump!
We're sworn to uphold the Constitution and the law.
And the law must be in harmony with the Constitution. And it is my position that these dumbass defense of marriage amendments passed in the several states are in direct contravention of the 14th Amendment. You know what? They bought this. Why won't they own it? This case would not even be in the Supreme Court were it not for the fact that a bunch of goddamn think tank driven, lobbyist funded, right wing punks went on a crusade in the name of Jesus to pass laws to make sure that a couple of guys couldn't find a justice of the peace and get all hitched up. And yet, somehow, we're still a country, even though gay people have been getting married all over the country. Go figure.
And it has to be consistent and agreed upon with three branches of government.
Liar!
One can't overrule the other two.
It specifically can. Because Justice Marshall said the Supreme Court shall have the final say on what the Constitution means. Because otherwise, you could have had the Postmaster General saying he was going to be the final word on what the Constitution means. Or the Secretary of War. We had a Department of War once instead of a Department of Defense. Or the Secretary of State, or just the President. Which at that point in time makes the Supreme Court effectively a nullity. The only way for the Supreme Court to have any meaning whatsoever is if it has a specific duty just like the other two branches. The President has fun things he and only he gets to do. The Congress has fun things that they and only they get to do. The Supreme Court had to have a fun thing that only they and they alone got to do. And that happens to be determining what the Constitution means.
That's all I'm saying. We learned that in ninth grade civics, but I'm convinced.
I don't know who taught your ninth grade civics, Mike, but I'm suspecting he probably wore. I don't know. Did he get home from work and put on a nice white percale sheet and a pillowcase?
Since a lot of Ivy League law schools must have forgotten that simple basic civics lesson along the way.
Yeah, see, they haven't forgotten that basic civics lesson down there in the God, guns, grits, and gravy, and grit, and grime, and and goobers and raisinettes law schools of the several states. It's the fault of the Ivy League intellectual pointy heads up there in your League of Ivies. See? The dumbasses ye have always with ye. Oh, hey, look, totally a separate topic, but just so you'll know, every now and then I get a note from somebody, so this guy who's hustling his 9/11 Truth DVD. Well, they've gotten on board with the Jade Helm 15, the paranoia. Sure, why not? So it's 10 minutes past the hour. Let's open up the phone lines to your thoughts, your considerations, your observations, your cussing and discussing. Both lines are open, of course. Area code 304-574-8178. That's one line. Then there's the stress line. So named in honor of Bill Miller. 304-663-4676. 304-663-4676. That's the stress line. Skype to Skype is Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn. And you're welcome to reach out to the program any way you see fit. And you will be more than welcome. We pride ourselves here at the Horn on being an open door for first-time callers, long-time listeners, short-time listeners, first-time callers, an open door for people who are nervous about calling radio programs because, well, I pride myself on the geniality of our conversation. So if you've never called in before, or if you have, long-time caller, first-time caller, it matters not. Be part of this idea that we continue to push along, this notion of conversation radio. This is conversation radio. This is the Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. We'll be back.
Oh,
I thought with Huckstery being all worked up about merge, a little something from the patron saint band of the horn, the Drive-By Truckers, might be in order. That, of course, from, from the album Decoration Day, that's Marry Me. Yeah. This is the horn, Moran Monday in particular, for this Memorial Day 2015. Let's see, where to go? I don't know, because I guess there was some confusion over whether or not I would be live this evening, this may be a three-hour filibuster. I hope it's not, but it may be. Sorry, I had to take care of a couple of things there. Let's see, 20 minutes, more or less. Less at the moment. And another 40 seconds or so, 20 minutes past the hour. And we do have lots more Moranity. But some non-Moran stuff, too. I find it very, I tweeted this weekend, there's a wonderful little book from, 20 years ago, I guess, called How the Irish Saved Civilization. And in it, the author details how much of Western culture was preserved in the monasteries of Ireland through the course of the Dark Ages, how it was a seat of learning at one point in time when most of the rest of Christendom was still fighting with the buzzards for what the wolves didn't want. And what I tweeted over the weekend is that, there was a book several years ago called How the Irish Saved Civilization, and they may have just done it again. Because you know by now about the referendum on marriage equality that took place there. The Irish voted not just yes, but oh hell yes on marriage equality. And there was much jubilation among gay and straight alike. In order to have a turnout and a result as big as it was, there had to be a lot of heterosexual Irish people voting yes as well. And it's a pretty happy nation over that right now because they've done something other European countries, have not. The Irish are again saving civilization. Granted, as I was reminded over the weekend, Canada has had marriage equality for quite some time now, but being Canadians, they're not prone to hooting and hollering about anything. They'll just politely remind you, well, we got rid of our bigotry a while back. Love me some Canadians. But it's not sitting well with who else? Holy Mother Church. Holy! Right. In the wake of the yes vote, the church is perplexed. The Archbishop of Dublin, Dermot Martin, who is not the Elfin Bishop, who made an ass of himself over over marriage equality. See, I refuse to call it gay marriage anymore. There's not straight marriage and gay marriage. There's just marriage. And so it's not a question of special rights for gay people. It's the same rights for gay people. So it's just marriage equality. It's not gay marriage. I try to make that a part of my vocabulary. Anyway, Archbishop of Dublin, Dermot Martin, said, the church has to find a new language which will be understood and heard by people. We have to see how is it that the church's teaching on marriage and family is not being received even within its own flock. There's a growing gap between Irish young people and the church, and there's a growing gap between the culture of Ireland that's developing and the church. Indeed, indeed. Well said, well said. They put the the Irish put the gay in Gaelic and took the ire out of Ireland. You know it. Those are interesting statements, though, by Archbishop Dermot Martin. The church has to find a new language which will be understood and heard by people. How about if the new language, Archbishop, your archbishopness, how about if the new church language is stops being the language of hate? Huh? Huh? Because that Savior y'all commissioned so many statues and paintings and stuff of, he was not a hater. But the church is. I mean, it's just chock-a-block with hate, and has been for several months now as this referendum approached in Ireland. Because, you know, the Irish church has turned, and then there's that, we have to see how it is that the church's teaching on marriage and family is not being received even within its own flock. I don't think you've got a flock problem, Archbishop. You can go flock yourself. What you've got is a people not interested in being part of your flock anymore problem. See, supra, language of hate. It's not that it's been not being received. The church's teaching is being received. It's just being rejected. As it should be by anyone with one single iota of basic human decency. And that growing gap between Irish young people and the church? Well, that's what happens when your attempts at brainwashing fail. That's what happens when young people go out into the world, educate themselves, get educated, and look back and go, huh, they've been lying to me. The church has been lying to me all along. Why should I ever believe another word that they say? I mean, this was a stomping for the church. This was a wholesale rejection. This was 62% to 38%. Granted, the majority in Ireland still considers themselves Catholic, but in light of the church's little, no, great big child sexual abuse problem, in the wake of the laundries, what are they, the Magdalene laundries, in the wake of great big stacks of precious little pro-life babies that were found to have been buried in septic tanks, the church, doesn't have quite the moral force it once had. By the way, demographically, there has been some analysis of the vote. And the 38% who voted no were old and rural. Imagine that. Meanwhile, the church is still widening that gap. They're up to their same old tricks because they defrocked a priest in 2012, a man by the name of Tony Flannery, because he had what are described as outspoken views on contraception and letting women into the priesthood. Yeah, because, see, there are, I mean, and granted, I've said in the past, you know, got to cut Pope Frank some slack, because Pope Frank can't do it all at once, and he's trying to make some headway, but the way forward is clear for the Catholic Church. Ditch the language of hate, get rid of the misogyny, open up the priesthood to women, who apparently are perfectly happy being celibate. If you do, and maybe have a more intelligent conversation about whether or not someone can put one of those little latex thingies on their John Thomas so as to not procreate. Pope Frank, may I commend to you the story of the Duggars. Do we really need families with 19 children in it, one of whom is incestuously molesting, because I think the sexual is redundant in that context, incestuously molesting four of his sisters? Really? See? The morality becomes clear. Let's run over to the Skype line and talk to Carol. Hey, wait a minute. That was wrong. Carol, are you there?
I am here.
Here at home, we're learning more this evening about that jet.
Can you hear me?
Oh, hold on. Yeah, I hear you. Just a minute. I got a problem.
Toronto Airport with U.S. fighter jets at its side.
That's another story for later. I had something open in the background. I'm sorry. Hi, Carol Baker.
Well, hi. How are you?
It's a toasty 87.8 degrees here in the Horn Studio sauna, so I'm a little schwitzy.
Well, you know, wasn't that long ago you were freezing your colonies off, so.
Yeah, I'm still looking for them.
I don't want to know.
That was TMI from the beginning.
I was rather intrigued by your conversation about what's wrong with the Catholic Church.
Yes.
And I feel like I can speak to that as somebody who was raised a Catholic. My father had a quiver full of children, not that they followed that, but. You know, they were a passionate people, Ma and Pa Baker. And my mom had a particularly difficult delivery with my brother that's just 1 year older than I am. He weighed 13 pounds when he was born.
Yeah, my mom did too.
Yeah, it's not fun. And, you know, she had just had enough. I mean, her body was breaking down and she was exhausted and she had a past full of kids and she went to the church and asked for permission to take birth control, and they said no. And so she went to my father and said, okay, then you're getting snipped. Well, they didn't wait long enough, and glory, here I am.
And there's Miss Carol.
There you go. But, you know, and it was tough on her, and I understand that. And I understand, I don't agree with the way that she approached motherhood necessarily, because I was this kid she didn't want, but was stuck with. And, you know, the whole idea that the church is sitting there wondering why, you know, their flock is going away from them. And it's like, well, you know, you've got all of these pedophile priests who molested all these kids that you lied about, covered up for, transferred into other parishes where they could reoffend, or sent away and the statute of limitations ran out, and here are these severely damaged people, and I don't think the Catholic Church has ever truly dealt with it.
No, they haven't. And all of this arises out of the rigidity of rules. And it's endemic to the church. And what I mean by that is I remember a conversation over Orthodox Judaism. And no one asks more questions about how to make sure that that one stays in the good graces of the Almighty than Orthodox Jews do.
True.
So rabbis are constantly coming up with moral and sometimes real world ripped from the pages of the headlines, hypotheticals, and there's that thing about pork in there.
Yeah.
And so there was consideration of what if a child's life, a good little Jewish baby's life, could only be saved by the administration of a drug that had been somehow produced in conjunction with pig.
They'd let it die.
Huh?
They would let the child die.
No.
No?
No. No, because the determination was that life was more valuable than the rigidity of law.
Really?
And deal with it later. I mean, I remember this conversation very, very clearly. You're not going to let the baby die. On the other hand, the Roman Catholic Church has, for all of its sanctity of life, over the years, shown absolutely no regard for the sanctity of a mother's life.
That is true.
Because women have been used as broodmares by the church from time immemorial.
Yes, they have.
And if you look, for instance, and that carries over into Protestantism as well, understand.
Mm-hmm.
So that if you look at, say, 18th century frontier white colonials, like in Appalachia, you will find husbands, men, who have a string of wives. And it's not like they're Mormons or anything.
Mm-hmm.
Their wives just happen to keep dying in childbirth. To be a frontier Scots-Irish settler in North America in the late 18th century and be 60 was downright rare.
Exactly.
And that continues all the way up until the story you just told about your mom. There is no value placed upon not just the life of, but the personage of, the agency of the mother.
That's right.
So that and that comes all the way into the present, with the argument in the Texas state legislature over whether or not a bunch of pasty-faced, doughy, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist men could ban abortions for fetal abnormalities.
Right. And I understand that almost came to blows once the Republican women backed out of that.
It was face-to-face. Screaming.
The Catholic Church has to understand that if you're gonna force the women to lie about their birth control, which they're doing, and if you're gonna let priests diddle little boys, and you're gonna peddle wholesale hate against homosexuals, well, younger, more enlightened Catholics are not gonna buy that.
Nor should they.
Nor should they. It's a new day, you know?
And yet, you know, we've got this language coming from the Archbishop of Dublin saying that somehow, implying that it's somehow the fault of the 62% of the Irish people for not properly understanding church teaching. What a load of hogwash.
No, I think they understood it all too well.
And rejected it.
And rejected it. And I can't wait for that kind of enlightenment to come to this country.
Do you think it can?
Do you know who Ray Comfort is?
I recognize the name. You're going to have to turn the light on.
He's a New Zealand-born Christian minister and evangelist. He's got this program on TV called The Way of the Master. And Kirk Cameron is a frequent guest.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah. Well, he has been weighing in on the whole Josh Duggar mess. And tweeted, standing by my friend Josh Duggar as a brother in Christ. This was in his BC days. Such were some of us. In other words, this was before he had truly accepted Christ. So he wasn't really a Christian when he molested them girls.
How did he live 14 years in that household without being a Christian?
Well, you know...
See, I mean, I've seen that argument made already, Carol, and that's the question that keeps on... If you're raised in a Christian household with all these Christian principles, by the time you're 14, I mean, hell, the fundamentalism I was brought up in had this concept, and maybe it exists in other brands as well, but it was called the Age of Accountability.
Mm-hmm.
And the Age of Accountability was generally held in my little it was actually a great big Southern Baptist church. We have 2,000 members. It was held to be 12. And so when you were about 10, they started explaining the Age of Accountability to you, and the nature of that explanation was by the time you reach the Age of Accountability, that's when God takes the training wheels off.
Yeah.
And you know, if you go out there and you die in your sin after you pass the Age of Accountability, your loving Father in heaven will shove the shish kebab right up your ass and send you right down onto the roaster in hell because he loves you so much.
Yeah, and let me tell you, it makes you wonder what Comfort did before he became born again.
Well, that quote tells me some of us were that way. So Pastor Comfort is admitting that he was an incestuous sexual abuser?
That's the way I took it.
Kind of scans that way, doesn't it? But the larger point I was getting at, Carol, is that by the time I was 10, I mean, when I turned 12, I couldn't get baptized fast enough. Because
mm-hmm.
I wanted to make sure that if the training wheels were off, then if something awful happened, I was going to go and sit at the right hand of Jesus. I don't want to go no hell.
Well, it just, I'm just sitting here going, you know, it's as if Catholic priests and other people of faith never committed any crimes. And it forces you to realize that this is how these Christians see atheists and how they see gay people. Since they don't fear God enough to follow the rules that they believe that have been set down, well, of course they're capable of inappropriately touching children.
I don't understand how that's even a question.
Well, it's convoluted logic that they use to defend their own bad behaviors and to demonize everyone who doesn't believe the way they believe.
Toward the ultimate goal of making us all believe the way.
Well, and then there's a creationist called Eric Hovind who took a similar approach, saying Duggar should be forgiven. He said, if evolution is true, then there's no absolute right and wrong. If evolution is true, Josh should not have admitted his faults over a decade ago because that one evolved bag of molecules does to another bag of molecules just doesn't really matter. Except the female bag of molecules have never gotten treatment.
Right.
And genuine counseling, because Christian counseling isn't counseling.
It is.
It's just further indoctrination.
No, it's further abuse.
Yes.
I mean, we read we read through some of that Bill Gothard stuff.
Yes.
And, you know, if you'd read it with a certain accent, you would have sworn it was translated from another language.
Ugh.
You know what I mean?
Yes. And I'm sick of the Duggar story. I am. But when you're reading things from, like, there was this guy named Matt somebody who wrote an article at The Blaze about how the Duggars aren't hypocrites, progressives are.
Oh, dear God, I read that thing. I hooted and like, I hooted like a barn owl.
I was like, that was some bona fide dumb fuckery. I could not let that slide because he didn't admit to his acts. They didn't receive counseling. And he's like, the behavior stopped there. Fuck you. Nobody knows if the behavior stopped there. My educated guess is that he learned how not to get caught. Sex offenders can't be rehabilitated.
No.
And he's saying, well, Josh was upfront with anybody who actually needed to know. Really? I'm betting beyond. I bet everything I own, Bob, that was never part of the conversation he had with the Family Research Council during his interview.
Well, there's that, and there are certain, Carol, there are certain societal standards we set with regard to who deserves to know.
That's right.
In the case of incestuously molesting your sisters, we have decided as a society that law enforcement authorities deserve to know.
That's right.
And in fact, because they deserve to know, and with regard to other crimes as well, they are empowered to go and get things like search warrants.
Yes.
They're empowered to interview witnesses.
Yes.
They're empowered to get arrest warrants. A prosecutor is empowered to take a case to the grand jury or present a juvenile petition to a judge acting as a juvenile referee. But you see, the Duggars decided that no, I wasn't even going to say God's law, but then again, there's plenty of incest going on in the Bible now, isn't there?
Yeah.
I mean, when you got Lot's daughters for a role model, you'll have this, I guess. Jesus.
But you know, my sister-in-law is a licensed clinical social worker, and she gave me some really good insight on this. You know, coming from a big family, and there were problems with one of my brothers. My oldest brother, to be exact, and that I'm not going to go into, but she pointed out that when you have children who are raised in a hypersexualized environment, which they obviously have to be if mom and daddy are breeding like rabbits, and there are so many kids in the family that the parents can't possibly watch all the kids, then they transfer the authority of parenting to the older siblings who mimic that hypersexualized mindset. And they are going to use the voiceless, powerless younger siblings to practice on. Not to mention that they're generally, those older siblings can be kind of mean about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been reading articles I've read a lot of articles over the last 3 days from people who left the Quiverful movement and talk about, there was that one book about to raise a child or to raise up a child.
Oh, yeah, that's full of the beatings and the agony.
It's full of the beatings and stuff. And these people have deep regrets about it. And some of them are adults now who were raised in that kind of an environment. And they said, you know, I was one of the older siblings who was ordered to beat the younger ones when they stepped out of line and our parents weren't present. And I got to tell you, there isn't a one of us that don't resent my oldest, the oldest three siblings, because they were the ones that were given all the power, and they were the ones who lorded everything over us. You know, you had to be obedient to mom and obedient to dad. It was like having five parents. And they were mean. They weren't mature enough to know how to raise children. And Denise kind of put everything into perspective for me when she said that, because I was like, that completely makes sense.
Well, it does.
Because it was a dynamic that I hadn't really considered in our family before. So I guess you're never too old to learn. But, yeah, the youngest ones of us did not have an easy go of it. I was lucky in that the abuser was afraid enough of my relationship with my dad that he knew never to touch me because he knew I'd tell. And I didn't find out about it until just a few years ago that he got all the rest of them. But it was... It's bad.
Well, look at the Duggar situation. You know, there's four Duggar sisters that he incestuously molested. Mm-hmm. And I feel the need, Carol, to put that adverb in there, incestuously, every time I mention this, because the for-profit media won't.
Absolutely.
They won't say incest. But it is.
Sure it is.
But he incestuously molested four of the girls in that household.
Yep.
According to the report, one of the little girls was really a little girl.
Yeah.
She was four.
Mm-hmm.
There's enough detail there to say that one of the little girls was incestuously molested by Josh Duggar. When the little girl was sitting on his lap and he was reading a story to her. Now, this is pure speculation. You want to bet that's the 4-year-old?
Oh, I'm sure.
Meanwhile, the other little girls were all sleeping in the same bedroom, stacked like cordwood.
Yeah.
But, and I, too, am as sick of this story as you are. But if it can be anything in the way of a teachable moment for this apparently unteachable nation, then I think we have to talk about it.
Yes. When he's described as a curious child, well, how is it that we're infantilizing him to mitigate his responsibility? And yet, when you go to the source material for this cult, they do everything that they can to blame the girls for being temptresses who obviously weren't dressed modestly enough. So, the victims...
Whoa, we're talking... Okay, I don't know what happened when, but it's not unusual for a 4-year-old to be in diapers.
No.
What's immodest about a diaper? See, that's when I go running. That's when I go running around tearing at my clothing. And he was curious. Does that mean that the females were incurious, or were they curious too? Or did they already? Or since they were the daughters of Eve, did they already have the carnal knowledge that comes down genetically from the talking snake?
I would say it would depend on who you ask.
I mean, this is... Okay, there's some physiology involved here, too. Not being a girl, it's not my physiology. But if he was doing anything more than stroking... Aren't there physiological things that happen to juvenile females upon the insertion of anything in the vagina?
Yes.
Doesn't that sometimes include blood?
It does.
So we're looking at a situation in which potentially not only did Ma and Pa Duggar sweep this under the rug, they ignored physical evidence.
Well, I want to know why the authorities are investigating these people for negligence. I don't know why they've still got custody of all their kids.
At this point in time, it would be reasonable if CPS would go in there and yank every minor child out of the home.
Absolutely.
And in fact, I would argue that it's probably dereliction of duty not to.
I agree.
But again, these are millionaires. And these aren't just, I have a reason for saying this, Carol, these aren't just millionaires. These are millionaire white people.
That's right.
On the other hand, Chicago Bears defensive lineman Ray McDonald was arrested this morning in San Jose, California. The charges against Ray McDonald are domestic violence and child endangerment. The San Francisco 49ers let him go last December after he was arrested on felony suspicion of domestic abuse and later accused of rape. In neither instance was he charged. Now, see right there, that's a little bit of wealth privilege.
Yeah.
But he's still a black man.
Yes.
And so he's been arrested again on domestic violence and child endangerment. We don't have details on what the nature of the child endangerment were, but we do have, of course, Adrian Peterson, wasn't it? Who beat his little boy in the testicles with a tree limb.
Yep.
By the way, Barbie is listening. Hi, Barbie. She says, I'll bet you the Duggars wanted to handle it within the family.
Oh, I would imagine there are a whole lot of dirty little secrets.
And the other thing that has occurred to me, because this whole sordid, filthy story is nothing but a series of questions and arguably a series of failures of the system itself. So, I think I talked to you Thursday or Friday. Josh Duggar was an open secret on internet message boards since 2007. 19 Kids and Counting has not been on since 2007. Not that old a program. The whole family was wined and dined and hoteled and swanned around Chicago by Oprah's people for a week in 2006. That's when somebody first dropped the dime, and that's when the people at Harpo Productions called the Arkansas State Police Sexual Abuse Hotline.
I'm still not sure if I buy that whole letter in a book.
Sorry. Oh, you certainly didn't need a letter in a book. All you needed was a pimply-faced 15-year-old with savvy enough to go read message boards. Because it's been around. So here's my question.
Yeah.
Since this was a known concern since 2007, what did TLC know, and when did they know it?
Yeah, aren't they big on outing everybody for everything?
Well, and what is the level of due diligence on something like this? Again, this has been an open secret on message boards since 2007. And so TLC has, you know, their sales staff has been out there merrily selling advertising. Their production staff has been in there filming them. In point of fact, Michelle Duggar got one member of the production staff fired for being a Homer sectional. On set one day, she called him over. Did you read this?
Uh-uh.
They were going to go to New York to be on the Today Show, the Duggars were.
Mm-hmm.
And Michelle, and I think we can have a Dr. Freud moment with this, too. Michelle is hyper terrified, hyper vigilant, hyper about homosexuality.
Oh, yes.
I mean, she gets real worked up. So they were getting ready to go to New York, and she asked the production crew, well, I hear there's just homosexuals all over New York City. I mean, are the streets safe and stuff?
I had heard that story, and she had one of the crew members fired.
Well, and so one of the crew says, well, why don't you ask Davey over there?
Mm-hmm.
And she said, what? Is he one of them? And so she stomps over, clickety-clacks in her heels or whatever, and confronts him. Are you a homosexual? And bless his heart, he looks at her and says, well, honey, it depends on who's asking. A week later, the man was fired for, what was the reason given? For causing conflict on the set.
I guess that's what happens when you're too fabulous.
Yeah, but see, they didn't want to handle that within the family.
No.
They didn't want to take that to the Lord in prayer. And the thing is, I wonder about Michelle's hypersensitivity about it. I wonder if Jim Bob has given her some reason to be so concerned. Jim Bob was, after all, a disciple of Bill Gothard.
Yes.
Who had 34 people come forward saying that they were groomed and that they were sexually molested by him. He only resigned from his institute at the age of 80.
But the lemmings all sit there and say, that's just the atheists and the homeschool haters out there telling lies. It wasn't hard for them to get 34 women to come forward and lie about Preacher. I mean, they'll make up any lie that they have to in order to defend these people. Mike Huckabee was excoriating the President of the United States because he felt that the Obama daughters weren't reverent enough or dressing modestly enough. He basically called them pole dancers. And held up the president and the first lady as bad parents. And he has done nothing but defend these people. Who have been caught, who have admitted that it happened.
Six times.
Every excuse in the book as to why it's different and it's okay.
In their press release, the Duggars referenced God 6 times. They referenced their daughter victims not once.
Oh, well, you know.
By the way, just and this is ancillary. This is certainly tangential. But I just saw a little bit of news. Remember Michael Sams?
Sure.
All-American Missouri linebacker, first college football player to come out as gay?
Absolutely.
Well, he couldn't get a job with an NFL franchise.
Yep.
And I'm sure it had nothing to do with him being gay, because all the press releases said, this has nothing to do with how gay he is. Well, bless his heart, he has signed on with the Canadian Football League's Montreal Alouettes. And unless, now it's been a long time since I watched Canadian football, but I think Mr. Sams is going to have a lovely time up there. Because isn't it true of Canadian football that there's no such thing as a fair catch on a punt?
I don't know.
If that used to be the rules, and if that is still the rules, oh, he's going to have such a time.
Yes, he is.
Yeah, I mean, you know, assuming that maybe he's on the punting team, and you know, maybe one of the gunners who goes down and knocks the living bejesus out of the guy trying to catch the ball.
I watched him play in Colombia.
Well, I mentioned that because, you know, you are there in, you're there in Hooterville, Missouri, so. You know, I spent a little time in Colombia myself. There used to be an awesome back in my college days, and I do mean awesome. It was huge. It was right there on the main street in Colombia.
An awesome what?
Head shop.
Oh, well, we don't have those anymore.
Oh, really? The God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing Christian has gotten rid of those, even in a place like Colombia?
Yeah, even in a place like Colombia. You have to rely on the Internet.
You know, the Internet probably put them out of business as much as the fundies did, but there was a great little
Canadian
message.
Canadian football, not the rule any longer, 5 yards.
Oh! Oh, well, probably humane. Because I remember
I have my own news ninjas.
You have your own, yes.
Well, yeah.
Interesting note coming in from Ron. He says, you know, one could postulate that Mrs. Duggar may have often thought that, damn, if I was just one of them lesbians, I wouldn't have to let this SOB climb on top of me anytime he wants to. He's not the one who has to go through the backaches, morning sickness, and labor pains. Help me, Jesus. Perhaps, Ron says, she's overcompensating.
Well, her sister, Michelle Duggar's sister, is a lesbian. Did you know that?
That's right.
And apparently she went through some financial troubles and had her home foreclosed and all that. And her millionaire sister and her husband wouldn't lift a finger to help her.
Jesus, God.
Because she's Lesbanese.
Yeah, how are things in Beirut?
Fabulous.
Fabulous, yeah. By the way, every now and then Andy Borowitz does some brilliant satire, and Sparky posted this one in the chat room, and I had to mute the mic because I spit took the monitor. In the aftermath of Irish voters legalizing gay marriage, Louisiana Governor Bobby Jindal has used his emergency powers to ban all Irish products from the state. The sweeping trade sanctions will prevent popular Irish products such as Jameson Whiskey and Guinness Extra Stout from being sold in Louisiana. Jindal explained that breaking off trade with Ireland was necessary to protect the sanctity of marriage in Louisiana.
Every time somebody takes a sip of Guinness, a part of straight marriage dies, he said.
But see, that's playing a little too close. That's playing a little close to the too close to the edge, Carol.
Yes.
Because I can see Piyush doing that in a heartbeat. Remember, Piyush is an amateur Roman Catholic exorcist.
Oh dear.
They're such a charming lot, aren't they?
God, those people.
And there's Jesus. It goes. Do you remember when we were talking the other night about? The Twin Peaks restaurants.
Yes.
That it
not being about what I thought it was about.
Yeah, it turns out. It's not a chain of tribute restaurants based upon the David Lynch ABC series of many years ago. No, it's as you informed me to my horror, they call themselves a restaurant, and all of their serving staff, who are female, wear a halter-tied flannel shirt with apparently the world's most profound push-up bras.
Yes.
I mean, the name tag alone can take up one breastus.
Yes.
A little bit of something sneaking out about Twin Peaks. Somehow or another, a corporate memo has seen the light of day. The Twin Peaks having told the Huffington Post, Men are simple creatures, and so you don't have to get too crazy to get them in the door.
I read the memo.
Yeah. Well, a current employee at Twin Peaks provided a branding memo to Think Progress. This is just charming.
Is this the one about being a guy and having women pay attention to you and having all the other guys?
Yeah, Twin Peaks contagious brand strategy. You know, if I was a restaurant, I would not put a single publication out. I don't care if it was I don't care if it was two words. If one of those words was contagious, I wouldn't. It's like we got a restaurant across the river here, Carol.
Mm-hmm.
It's called Dirty Ernie's. It's Dirty Ernie's Rib Pit. I'm not going to set my foot in the door. I'm not going to eat it anywhere called Dirty.
There you go.
It's just begging for trouble. You know, I mean, why not have, I don't know, Ebola Eddie's. Brand vision, our highest calling. Daring to create an adventure guys can't live without. Brand promise. What we must deliver every day. 2, adventurous, sports-minded, work hard, play hard, guys, that's guys-guys, right?
Yeah. Guys, like men's men.
Right, which kind of makes it sound, forgive me, that sounds a little homoerotic, who deserve better food, colder beer, and love to have their ego stroked by beautiful girls, Target.
Is that what they're calling them now, their mm-hmm. egos?
Twin Peaks is the ultimate sports lodge that feeds their ego with the attention they crave. Brand personality. Our guests love us because we are Rugged Man Lodge, irreverently witty, playfully attentive, energetic, arrogantly better. Raving fan identity. What our customers would love to say about themselves. I am the man. I believe in freedom, bacon, working hard and playing harder. I like attention from beautiful girls and being recognized in front of the guys. I got game. I deserve to drink cold beer and catch the game without being asked what I'm thinking. Now get me a beer. Pretty please? Yeah, oh, yeah, I remember when you shared that. Yeah, that's the whole thing. Oh, my God.
I'm disappointed that they don't hand these guys a cudgel when they walk in the door. But make the girls wear a top knot on their heads so they're easier to drag around.
Or drag down the stairs like Bill O'Reilly did his wife.
There you go. Family values, baby.
But the thing is, how many really manly, studly men do you reckon actually go into Twin Peaks? How manly, okay, there's the question, I guess. How manly and studly were the members of the Bandidos and the, oh, what were the others? The Cossacks. How manly and studly were they?
I don't know. They didn't look very manly and studly in the orange jumpsuit, so I can't tell you. But by nature of them being part of a biker gang, I mean, I don't know how much more testosterone you got to have pumping than that.
Well, see, I don't know. Biker gang, I always thought that there's a little compensating going on. It's kind of like when the rolling coal types go by with belching that black smoke and every female member of my family now hears that and goes, there goes a guy with a tiny little dick.
It's true. The size of their Johnson is inversely proportionate to the amount of smoke, black smoke, that comes out of that pipe.
I mean,
Or as we like to call it, their special purpose.
Naven, you have a special purpose. Right. Oh, God. Well, you know, I'm glad. I meant to tweet out that I was going to be on this evening, and I dropped the ball on that one, so thanks for catching up on the just on the odd chance I would be here, because all chances with me are odd chances because I'm odd.
Well, it was this is the first day that it hasn't rained in probably 10, and I desperately had to mow because it was like now or never, or I was going to have to hire somebody with a much larger tractor than I own.
Yeah, brush hog.
Yeah, exactly. And that's just not cool.
Yeah, you probably much more than you could have hated
out. I got back in time to have a chat with Bob.
There we go. Exactly. And by the way, yeah, you have been getting rained on, and now it's coming to us. I was looking at our forecast for the coming week. We are all here in almost level West by Cole, Virginia, all the way to a week from Wednesday. It's the icons are nothing but clouds with lightning coming out of them.
I'm a giver, Bob.
I can't thank you enough. You know, they must really love you down in Texas and Oklahoma.
Well, it's like I said, I had one day where it wasn't going to rain, and then the next five or more rain. So, and the lawn was so soggy, I can't tell you how many times I almost got stuck.
You know, when it starts sucking your shoes off, it's time to just go inside and wait a while.
It was getting there. But I didn't. There's no wait a while. It was today or nothing. And the winds were blowing strong, so I waited until late in the day to go out and do it, to give it as much of a chance to air out as I could. And now I'm just a dirty dog who needs a bath.
And Cat Stevens is probably having nothing to do with you.
He's having a grand time because now the birds are all out in the grass. So he's out stalking.
Yeah, just, you know, staying in practice.
Yep, he won't catch any of those birds, but he's more of a rabbit guy.
Oh, it was a weird day today out on the highway. You know, I'm toddling along in our U-Haul truck, and
yes,
the roads we were on are narrow and crummy. I mean, they're hard roads, but that's a low bar.
Two-lane winding.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And I'm driving along, and Agnes looks at me and goes, "Deer?" Yes. No, deer. What?
Oh.
And I got a damn deer running beside the U-Haul on the side of the road, like a dog chasing a car.
That's bad, because they'll run right in front of you. I've had them do it.
And I just started, "Get the away from me. Do you know how much the damage deposit is on this, you little son of a..."
Yeah.
And then a little bit later, there was a little rabbit who decided to cross in front of me. I mean, I think there was some deity fucking with me today, Carol.
A lot of suicidal animals out there.
Well, not, yeah, because this rabbit was like, it was like a Heisman tailback rabbit. Because, I mean, he squirts across the other half of the road, gets to the center line, looks at me, head fakes left, dodges right, and then just as he's under my wheel, is like puts on this extra burst of speed and gets there to the other side of the road. And I looked in the rearview mirror on the side of the truck, and you know, I'll be goddamned if that rabbit wasn't sitting back there on his hind legs, you know, flipping me off. Yeah, it's like they knew they could get me to roll. They just knew they could get me to roll that truck. The goddamn ground squirrels were doing it.
Oh, my.
I saw one gray squirrel sitting on the yellow line in the middle of the road, like 200 yards up. Did not move.
Did you run over him?
No. He just tried to make me roll the truck.
No possums?
No, broad daylight.
Hey, that doesn't matter around here. And you know what else there is around here now that I've never seen before? Freaking armadillos.
There's your global warming.
I have never seen armadillos. They're here.
Yes, they are. And you know what? In another year, another 10 years or so, they'll be in, oh, I don't know.
Iowa.
Yeah. Wisconsin.
I couldn't believe it, because I always thought it got too cold here for them.
Not anymore.
Not anymore.
But see, the thing about armadillos is that people who are not used to having them in their environment go,
yes.
Oh, aren't they kind of cute? And then you go, hey, dumbass, they carry leprosy.
Yes.
Because they really do.
Yes.
Gators are finding their way into the Tennessee River estuaries.
Jesus.
The Tennessee River, which is North Alabama, East and West Tennessee. Yeah.
Damn.
and those great big humongous southern palmetto bugs, you know, giant cockroaches.
Yes.
Those damn things are up into Pennsylvania now.
We've had them here for a while. And they'll scare the snot out of you.
Well, yeah, they will, and they make you feel dirty and gross.
Yeah.
But there's no climate change. No climate change at all.
Not at all. And I know because I saw a senator with a snowball.
Exactly. Assholes.
There you go. All right, well, you have a good night, sir.
You have a lovely evening. I'm glad you got all your grass cut, and we will talk soon.
Okay, I'm going to go get the dirt off. Talk to you later.
All right, later. Bye. The one and only Carol Baker calling from Hooterville. And let's see, that means both lines are open if you want to participate in the program this evening. 304-574-8178, or Skype to Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn, or on the stress line, 304-663-4676. Ron with a note, he says, I remember when we got that hardtop road. My motto is thump thump is better than bump bump. Screech and the famous slow motion roll. Speaking of bugs and other nasty things making their way north, Ron says, conservatives have made their way up to Canada. Is there no justice? We already get the winter from hell, and now we have these pukes. Oh, the morans ye have always with ye. It's a Bible verse worth memorizing. By the way, Steve in New York with an idea for a what would be an awesome restaurant. Dos cojones. Guys wear thongs, nothing else. You know, I bet that would bring in the Bachelorette crowd in a big way. But, well, wait, what's Amy, what's her name, the comedian? Didn't she do a segment on a sort of a spoof on Hooters that was like that? Peckers or something like that? Yeah. Steve says, Twin Peaks, two words, class, C. Class C, get it? See what he did there? Yeah. Steve in China. Couldn't resist. Any gal who's been pregnant for something like half her life is quite naturally going to be panicky in the presence of a man who has no interest in impregnating anything. Well, that might very well explain Michelle Duggar. Maybe gay men are some sort of an assault on maybe she's so fragile and insecure that gay men are an assault on her own self-image. Weird. Under the subject heading of Catholicism and women power, a note from Diane in Kansasstan, the marvelously coherent Diane in Kansasstan. Once I understood, Diane says, the role of the Catholic Church and the witch burnings in Europe, I grasped the nature of that hierarchy. You know, one of the lovely things about the marvelously coherent Diane in Kansasstan is not just her marvelous coherence, but her great gift for understatement. Once I understood the role of the Catholic Church in the witch burnings in Europe, I grasped the nature of that hierarchy. In 1326, the Church authorized the Inquisition to investigate witchcraft, and the Christian theologians developed their own proof of witches soon thereafter. Maleficus Maleficorum, is that? The burning of thousands of women that followed is well documented, although estimates of the numbers vary. I was not the same after delving into that subject. I am convinced that the threat to women's consciousness of their own power is still relevant, as if the memory of the flames persist. Metaphorically, an alchemical transformation is needed, and, in my view, it won't be based on organized religion. It has been a vehicle for too much evil, and the internal contradictions cannot yield a higher synthesis. Hi, Carol! Signed, Diane in Kansasstan. She being, of course, much too modest to ever refer to herself as marvelously coherent, even though she is. Also from Stephen China, thank God, the church, there was an exclamation point in parentheses there, the church at long last is beginning to lose the majority, along with its incredibility. Or is it the other way around? Ecce homo. Regards, Steve in China. Thank you, Steve. So we are at 22 minutes past the hour. I mentioned Florida, or Florida, not Florida, Oklahoma and Texas, because there's some serious not climate change happening there. Deadly not climate change. Firefighter was killed early on Sunday when he was swept away during an attempted water rescue in Claremore, Oklahoma. Another family had a vacation house in Wimberley, Texas. They were staying there when flash floods struck on the Wimberley River, or the Blanco River, the Blanco River. 8 people, including 3 children, missing from that house, swept away. There are 3 people missing in San Marcos, Texas. That the Blanco River in Wimberley, Texas, the highest it had ever risen above flood stage was 21 feet. Or I'm sorry. 34 feet above flood stage. Or 34 feet. 34 feet rise in the Wimberley River. I'm really screwing this up. That was 1928. Well, the Blanco River, as of this weekend, rose 28 feet above flood level, 7 feet higher than the previous record high of 1928. The river rose, according to witness reports, the river rose 33 feet in 3 hours. It's quite possible it rose more, but the flood gauge washed away. Hays County, Texas, according to CNN, Carly Smith, Emergency Management Coordinator, says, "We do have whole streets that have maybe 1 or 2 houses left on them, and the rest are just slabs." And with nothing more than another couple of inches of rain, the flooding could start all over again. There's a flash flood out for most of south central Texas between now and into early Tuesday morning. Thunderstorms, tornadoes, baseball-sized hail. And, see, extreme weather events are part and parcel of the modeling of climate change, so that you can have a long drought, and then after the long drought, you'll get more water than you wanted, by a long shot. That's what just happened in Texas. U.S. Drought Monitor says there is no portion of Texas or Oklahoma in extreme drought as of last Thursday. That's extreme drought. Not to worry, though. The scientists say there will be more droughts coming in the next few decades. As well, there will be more cataclysmic rainstorms. Temperateness and moderation are going to be a thing of the past. The Rocky Mountain Institute says that in the Midwest, storms that drop over 3 inches of rain have gone up by 50%. That's not because the Creator wanted to send drought relief. That's because we've fucked up our planet. Nonetheless, Texas to this day has no climate change preparedness whatsoever. And, you know, that's what makes the groups down there working, struggling to see something enacted. Oh, you got to respect their courage and bravery. Natural Resources Defense Council says between more intense rainstorms and sea level rise, flooding will only increase if we don't address climate change. And some are. Some people, some entities, and some corporations are trying to address climate change. To wit, one of the largest insurance companies in the world has promised to drop its remaining investment in coal. Additionally, that same company has said it will triple its investment in green technology. You know what? I bet tripling the investment in green technology is still not the equivalent of dropping all the coal. Just say it. No, AXA, A-X-A, at their AGM, their annual general meeting this week in Paris, they said they would sell off 500 million euros in coal assets by the end of this year. And they will instead, that's not a bad deal. They're going to increase their green investments in renewable energy, green infrastructure, green bonds to 3 billion euros by 2020. This all according to CEO of AXA, Henri de Castries, who is not making any bones about the threat posed by climate change. Because, see, they're an insurance company. And regardless of what one may like or not like to say about insurance companies, one would not like to say, for instance, that they're really good, genial, sympathetic, empathetic. No, they're insurance companies. What you can say about insurance companies is that insurance companies have to be and are among the first companies in the whole business development of the modern world to be reality-driven. And that goes back to things like actuarial tables and mortality tables. Because they're in the gambling business, insurance companies are. And they're not about to go around making stupid bets. And betting that climate change is not real is a really, really dumb bet. That's a come take my money away from me bet. AXA is now calling climate change a core business issue, and they recognize the fact that climate change-driven weather-related events are already hurting their bottom line, because last year alone, AXA paid out over €1 billion worldwide in weather-related insurance claims. De Castries said, "The facts are undeniable. If we think we can live in a world where temperatures would have increased by more than 2 degrees Celsius, we're just fooling ourselves." Insurers are the mirror, he continued, of what happens in the economy and in society. We try to increase what we do on the prevention side. So that's another moment in the divestment campaigns. And, you know, where divestment can be a little bit iffy because the money will always go somewhere else, it's a little different when it's an insurance concern. Because when insurance companies start saying, "We ain't touching it," then that means that the people who have fiduciary duties to the money in corporate boardrooms, well, they perk up their pink little ears and listen. Because if you're not going to be invested in the stuff, if an insurance company is not going to be invested in the stuff, they're very likely not going to be willing to insure it either. And not only is De Castries talking about what AXA does, he has become an apostle for businesses to take seriously the issue of climate change. He's calling on financial institutions the world over to look at a different way to consider climate change and the value of long-term investments in light of climate change as we head toward December in the Paris climate talks. He said, as long as the systemic risk of carbon is not correctly embedded into regulatory frameworks, it will always be a story of a few responsible actors doing their best within a broader financial system that is not designed for sustainability. We need to launch a serious discussion on financial regulation and greater incentives to focus on long-term investments. That's pretty, it's pretty big talk coming from a corporate player as huge as AXA. And you know what? European corporations may very well take his lead. And maybe some American companies. Or maybe big American insurance concerns will just continue to get bled dry by climate change claims until they weaken enough to be purchased by the likes of AXA. You know, I had a little hand in all of this. I was among the first wave of activists to cross the pond and start reading the Riot Act to these corporations about their participation in coal. Others have gone on since, and they continue to do good work. But you learn along the way that it does matter to talk about these things. It does matter to be engaged. It does matter to be involved. By the way, Barbie notes, it costs us $2,100 a year for flood insurance. That's aside from our homeowner's insurance. The homeowner's insurer will not insure us for floods. And there are going to be more and more and more claims. Imagine that town in Texas where there's two or three houses still standing on a street and the rest are concrete slabs. There's going to be insurance claims out of that. And for those who are covered and those who get compensated, well, insurance companies don't like paying money. They hire entire armies of lawyers whose only job is to say we don't pay. And so when they have to, well, what's that old saying? When the belly's empty, the head will learn. There's some learning going on. A little freedom update. You know, like in Wolverines! Right. Over this Memorial Day weekend, more than 40 people have been involved in firearm-driven violence. As of this morning, 9 people had been killed, another 32 wounded in Chicago since this past Friday. Among the dead, among the shot, Giselle Johnson, 4 years old. 2 other children shot in the same incident, 17-year-old young man hit in the chest and had a graze wound to the neck. and a 15-year-old girl who suffered a graze wound on her forehead. Giselle has been upgraded to serious condition since. She is, in other words, clinging to life. The first person to die of this outbreak of freedom in Chicago was a 34-year-old man. He was sitting on the front porch of his home in Wicker Park when he got shot in the chest and shoulder. The youngest to die, a 15-year-old boy in Bronzeville, shot along with another 14-year-old in an alley. A 20-year-old man with multiple gunshot wounds was killed. A 24-year-old man was shot in the head. A man between 20 and 30 shot in the face. A 29-year-old woman shot in the chest and leg. 35-year-old man was shot in the stomach, and a 28-year-old man was shot in the head and shoulder. This is not specific, no matter how hard the morons of the right wing try to make it, to Chicago. Thus far, on the 25th day of May, and probably since this number was published, it's gone up, we are almost 5 full months into May, and, you know, I can't imagine to think that the listeners to this program in other countries must just hear these numbers in slack-jawed horror. The first 5 months in 2015 have brought 18,760 gun incidents to the United States of America. That, according to the Gun Violence Archive, of that 18,760 gun incidents, there have been 4,830 deaths. Of those 4,830 deaths, 249 of them have been children. But it's okay, because freedom. After all, if those people weren't being sacrificed on the NRA's blood-soaked altar, well, the government would have its jackbooted heel on our necks. That's the argument. A few people, well, okay, a few thousand people, a few thousand United States citizens, including a couple of hundred children, have to be involuntarily sacrificed every year so that we can have freedom. What a country! Let's run over to the Skype line and talk to Barbie. Hey, Barbie. Barbie. I know I got the right button and everything. Are you muted, Barbie? Barbie. Okay, we will mute back for a moment, and hopefully Barbie will get her audio sorted out. And I really did have the right button. Rolling downhill toward the 9 p.m. hour and the close of the program. By the way, Malloy is live this evening as well. So that's at least two live progressive radio programs today. I'm not sure if Rick Smith was live or not. Had another story here. Courtesy of Robert in northern West Virginia. And I'm not nearly so interested in what the for-profit journalists were interested in this story as I am in a little something that occurs a little ways down into the story itself. On this day alone, there were 6 threats to passenger aircraft that were taken very, very seriously by the authorities, for want of a better term. Among other things, an Air France plane was escorted to JFK Airport this morning after an anonymous threat was received. The FBI claiming that the plane has since been checked and cleared with no incidents or hazardous materials reported on board the flight. The State Police Barracks in McHenry Barrack, Garrett County, Maryland, got an anonymous call of a chemical weapons threat aboard Air France Flight 22, which at the time was en route from Paris to New York. There were threats also to flights going into Newark and a flight into Boston. A Saudi Airlines flight from Saudi Arabia was threatened that was landing at JFK. But this, right here, this is the one that raised up my paranoia. Just one little teeny tiny paragraph. Now, you know, it's been in the news lately that the NSA is saying, well, we're going to stop spying on you guys, okay? In fact, one headline that I have before me, NSA phone surveillance program is closer to dead after failed Senate vote, with the Senate taking no action to extend or revise the NSA's phone data surveillance activities. It will expire on June the 1st. Thus, why my pink little ears perked up when I read this paragraph via ABC News. Just one second. This paragraph, I guess, because I always want to offer the disclaimer that this I'm not going all Alex Jones. It just kind of makes you wonder a little bit. So the anonymous threat was called into a state police barracks in Garrett County, Maryland. We got that? Yeah. Well, Delta flights were threatened, United flights were threatened. An American Airlines flight was threatened. A Royal Kingdom of Saudi Arabia flight was threatened. So, they get the threat at the barrack in Garrett County, Maryland. And then this paragraph. The tip was called in at 6:45 a.m. on an untraceable line, and the caller did not identify himself, a senior federal official told ABC News. Interesting sentence, isn't it? We have been told that the NSA is gathering and can gather every damned phone call made in the country, and especially out of the country. I mean, we've got a series of Uniblab 10,000s out there that are buried miles. There's this giant data collection center in Utah, and they are grabbing every phone call made. So why, then, is it possible that a phone call can come in to a state police barracks in Garrett County, Maryland, that is identified in a for-profit media story from ABC News as untraceable? Really? You can call the state police of Maryland and ask them if their refrigerator's running, and nobody's going to know who the pranking little 14-year-old is who does it? You can call the state police barrack in Garrett County, Maryland, and ask them if they've got Prince Edward in a can and get away with it? Or you can call the state police barrack in Garrett County, Maryland, and say that there's a chemical weapon hazard on a flight from Paris to New York, and it's untraceable? Garrett County, Maryland ain't that far from NSA headquarters. I'm just saying that it's a little bit interesting that this story pops at the same time or immediately after a weekend in which the Senate appeared willing to let the NSA's phone data collection program, die. You ever lose your cell phone? Mm-hmm. Did you ever try to get hold of your cell phone carrier and say, "Hey, listen, can you just call it and find it for me, please?" Especially if you deal with AT&T, whom we know openly willingly collaborated with the NSA data collection program. "Oh, we're sorry, we're not allowed to do that." Yeah, see, Ron says, simple answer, no. And I presume that simple answer to be to my question about whether or not you can call a pimply-faced 14-year-old can call the state police barracks in Garrett County, Maryland, and ask them if they've got Prince Albert in a can. "Well, you better let him out!" and get away with it. No, that can't be done. But it is apparently possible to completely hoodoo them from an untraceable line. You know, they sell those over in the souks of the Middle East. Untraceable lines for calling in terrorist threats to the Garrett County, Maryland state police barracks. Yeah, sure. Let's run back over. I'm just saying. And I don't know which way this goes, that they're lying or they're lying. That they're lying in the one regard, then that they can't trace it. Remember, we couldn't trace the cell phone of the guy who went up and who left on a bus from Baltimore and rode on a bus making cell phone calls all the way to New York City, and they couldn't catch him before he got to the bus station in New York. Remember that one? Curiouser and curiouser, said Alice. Hey, Barbie.
Hey.
There she is.
All is well in the Holman home now.
Oh, good, good, good. Young Asa has been corrected, I trust.
He was banned to his playpen.
Aww.
He'll get to come back in after the show.
And Asa is how many weeks now?
10.
Nice.
And sassy.
And you're walking you more than you're walking him, right?
No. Mama put her foot down Friday night.
Oh, my.
Yeah, I had to make a 911 call, and I got some pretty good advice.
Really?
Mm-hmm. And he has been behaving beautifully ever since.
Oh, very good, very good.
I was being way, way too soft-hearted with him. Auntie Carol told me how to do it.
I was going to say, did Auntie Carol straighten him up?
Yep.
Jerking not in that ass. Right, yeah.
You know how tough she is.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Even precious, adorable little golden retriever puppies have best not crossed Auntie Carol.
Well, she's channeling herself through me, and he's got the message loud and clear.
Very
he walks
nice.
Beside me down the trail. He's potty trained now.
Oh, he's going to be a good puppy.
He is.
Excellent. Well,
best thing I ever did.
So, let me clear something. You were involved in the great floods of the Midwest a few years ago, were you not?
Oh, terribly, yeah. Lost the whole house inside.
Oh.
Had to rebuild the whole thing from the inside out.
So you know a little bit about what these people down on the Blanco River in Texas are going to be going through.
Oh, my heart goes out to them. They're in for a lot of red tape, and, you know, if they get hit, and it's going to be a long road to hoe. It took me a year and a half to get my home back.
Good God.
Yeah. We lived in a FEMA trailer all that time.
Oh.
In the horrible Iowa winter.
Well, not just that, but I remember how many people got sick in FEMA trailers after Katrina.
Yeah. My husband stayed, but I moved out because I just couldn't take it physically.
Mm. So are you better protected against it for the next time?
We had to have flood insurance.
Well, I mean, how far from the body of... I mean, are you on a floodplain? Or is the entire... Is
we
all
weren't. We weren't until then, and they redid the floodplain, and now we're just barely in it. Thank you. How convenient.
Well, yeah. But, you know, when you get flooded out and lose a home, it's
yeah,
pretty obvious.
Right.
So what body of water, what stream flooded the...
The Cedar River.
Okay.
And that flows into the Mississippi. But we're 2 miles from the river, if that gives you any idea as to the widespread damage it did around here.
Oh, it looked, I remember when the story was breaking, it looked like the whole state was underwater.
Yep. We had never been flooded, and it was up halfway over the, halfway up the house before it started receding, and we lost everything we owned, everything. Including vehicles.
I was going to say it's the same thing as a house fire, only wet.
Exactly. And we couldn't get anything from the insurance company except payment for the car.
So y'all had to eat it.
Eat it.
Mercy sakes.
Yeah, but the Red Cross, they did give us a couple $1,000 for clothes.
Did they bill you for it on the back end?
No, but luckily, you know, I had savings. We had a really, really good savings account cooking and, you know, retirement. Luckily, we didn't have to hit the retirement, but the savings was gone by the time we got done. You know, that stuff you plan on for emergencies, hospital bills, things like that.
A literal rainy day fund.
Exactly, because we're both disabled. So, you know, we were really counting on that to pay hospital bills and things like that in the future.
Mercy.
Now we live like everybody else and just pray nothing happens.
And the thing is, you can pray all day, but climate change is climate change, Barbie.
Oh, exactly. And you know what? I wouldn't be surprised if we got hit again with the way it's going.
Well, I don't mean to be terrifying or anything, but it's almost kind of a guarantee, isn't it?
It pretty much so. You know, every spring I start doing the, oh, please don't rain, oh, please don't rain. And we're getting plenty of it, but it's raining all around us right now. So the rain gods are hearing me, I guess.
Well, that's
we're getting, like I said, getting rain, but we're not getting dumped on.
We're looking for something on the order of 9 or 10 straight days of rain starting tomorrow.
Yeah, I can hear the sump pump go every once in a while. So
we used to have one of those.
Yeah. Didn't help us out a few years back. And we had 2 or 3 going, and it's still, you know, even to get the water out afterwards. And it took us months.
Wow.
And it was so not pretty. And then when we, you know, took everything out of the house, we had to line it up side the road, you know, furniture in one spot, biohazard material in another, not biohazard, but like paint and things like that, and trash, and people were actually coming along, and I had just bought new appliances for the entire kitchen that 6 months before the flood, so we lost all those, and I had them up there, and of course, it all looked new, and wouldn't you know it, somebody came along and took it.
Wow.
Yeah, and they don't realize, you know, it can make them sick.
Yeah, no kidding, no kidding. Hey, Barbie, we got a roll, but it's awfully good talking to you.
Awesome, Bob.
All right, you have yourself a lovely evening.
You too, and everybody there.
All right, take care.
Thanks a lot, Bob.
Thank you, Barbie. The one and only Barbie, sister of Carol, the fabulous Baker Girls. And that means we are at the end of this Memorial Day Moran Monday broadcast. Thank you all very much for joining in, those of you who, who did. Back tomorrow evening with Titanic Tuesday, of course. Thank you to John and to our anonymous contributor who was not here. And thank you to Kath and to Randy for meeting the matching challenge and thereby doubling your money. That's all just amazing, and it's the only way we keep all of this going. Let's see. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you to John Fox and to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org, Ben Birch. Thank you to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ACHECT, ACHECT.org. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.